You know more than nothing, Mycroft. I kept a careful distance from the Emperor, standing by the wall where he and his guards could watch my movements. Apollo dicebat. Apollo, Mojave used to say, I answered, Utranquiscus quesnaeus sententiam Mitsubishorum presentarit. That François Quesnay previewed, Mitsubishi thought. Sugiyama Apollinem numquam incidit, sed aliquis qui similiter Apollinem cogitat gravissime considerenda est. Sugiyama never met Apollo, but anyone who thinks similarly to Apollo should be given the greatest consideration. The Emperor was pacing like a lion too long in its pen, his limp conspicuous. I have Cornell Mason's permission to disclose that he does not have his original left foot, and the replacement has never sat well with him, for reasons more psychological than medical. It still goes on, the trial by ordeal. In 2239, the autopsy of Mycroft Mason revealed evidence of old tortures on his body, protracted and professional. The public demanded an explanation. And so you learned how hard it is to be the Imperator Destinatus. Ordinary Masons face a law code stricter, but no more brutal than any other hives, but we familiaris, in return for trust and power, surrender all protections, subjecting ourselves wholly to Caesar's will. If Caesar demands our imprisonment, our torture, or our death, we have no right even to ask why. Caesar accepts no less from those few he trusts with the welfare of his 3 billion. Outsiders imagine this was a symbol. If once a century a known traitor was put to death, you assumed this was the only exercise of Mason's capital power. How wrong you were. A Mason will not pass the throne to one who has not been tested beyond the limits of sanity and mercy. Only he who comes through hell still sane and loyal can, they say, resist the corrupting influence of power this close to absolute. I understand that Cornell Mason's original left foot was hacked away in pieces with a heavy, clean-edged cleaver, not the most sophisticated of tortures. A trained eye can spot remnants of those elsewhere upon him, but one of the most psychologically damaging, as the victim watches pieces of his body turn to meat before his eyes. Young Ken Mardy, the prodigy who had fancied himself as sturdy as a samurai, I broke in an hour with such a method. But Cornell Mason endured 3 weeks at his predecessor's order, and emerged as strong as he is now. That J.E.D.D. Mason has never disappeared for such a period is often taken as proof that he will not be the successor. Mason's voice was stone. Indices mutatis sunt. The lists have changed. My eyes went wide. Mutati? Changed? Sic. Ecce. Yes, look. At Caesar's command, a wall displayed video from the Romanovan Forum, where reporters besieged the marble podium of the rostra and a slouching figure at its microphones. Vice President De Lupa, called the loudest of the pressmen. Why didn't the Anonymous recognize before now that someone had tampered with their list? The Anonymous can't see into the censor's office, the Vice President answered. If someone intercepts the list between when the Anonymous sends it and when Censor Ancelet receives it, there's no way the Anonymous can tell. Does this mean other communications from the Anonymous are likely to be fake as well? Absolutely not. Remember, when the Anonymous contacts me, there are 7 levels of security. The 710 list is an exception, since it's delivered directly to the censor. All we've learned is that Romanova's security isn't as good as mine. It was a perfect answer, but Brody De Lupa could not afford less. Rarely has there been a man with so tenuous a hold on office as Humanist Vice President Brody De Lupa. Humanists love the Anonymous, since it is certainly heroic for a faceless, nameless voice to make itself the most influential in the world just by publishing some intelligent opinions. Even young Sniper, who studied so hard to boost his fame by making himself a joy to interview, had charisma sex appeal to keep him interesting, while the anonymous has only the irksome merit of being always reasonable. The voting board was strict. However many thousands of humanists may wish to vote for the anonymous, one cannot hold office without revealing one's identity. It did not take long for clever men to circumvent the rule by running for office with Earth's simplest platform. I will be a proxy for the anonymous. Does the anonymous think there's a connection between this tampering and the incident at Black Sakura? DeLupa scratched the stubble which persisted in the wrinkles of his cheeks like mildew. They have all been ugly, the last five proxies. Did you notice? Some say the anonymous does not want a puppet with charisma of its own, but I think they are chosen for the merit that Ganymede would find them too repugnant to seduce. There's no saying for certain at this point, DeLupa answered, but I suspect there's a connection, especially considering the recent announcement that there was also an attempt to steal the Gordian list from the Brillist Institute. Then there's a conspiracy. The vice president tried to make his nod feel sage. I don't know if it's a prank or if someone is expecting profit, but when three of the lists are targeted, that's not coincidence. It may be time to rethink the gambling and what it incentivizes. Even without thefts and substitutions, the pressure on the columnists makes objectivity almost impossible. Cornell Mason scowled. Quid facit, anonymous? Modone attentionem a sacrum nigrum avertit? What is the anonymous doing? Just drawing attention away from Black Sakura? If so, it was brilliant. With interference in the anonymous's list, and Gordian's, Black Sakura would virtually drop out of the public eye, and with it, Kohaku Mardi's fatal numbers 33-67, 67-33, 29-71. Even the Mitsubishi might be saved. I answered, Fieri potest, Kaiser. It could be, Caesar. Quotanis discipulus iocosis aliquis brillem indicem soripere temptat, et nihil refert. Every year some student prankster tries out stealing the Brillist list and it comes to nothing. Causa debest si hoc anno magister Faustus populum id operam dare volt. There must be a reason if this year Headmaster Faust wants people to care. Beneficium aliqui necessest. It must benefit someone. Mason nodded. Causa gravissima debest si anonymous mendacios vulgat. The cause must be serious if the anonymous is publishing lies. Hos quoque ecce. Look at this too. At Caesar's will, the vice president vanished, replaced by the newest chart. Two lists, side by side, the so-called altered list, which we had seen in the censor's office and which we were now to believe was actually the work of hackers, and next to it, the new, real list. But the supposed altered list was the real one, I had no doubt. We had worked with it in the censor's office. The anonymous was retrofibbing, faking interference, pretending his original list had been hacked to make it look like the same mysterious enemies that had targeted Black Sakura had gone after the anonymous too. There was only one difference between the two lists. Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi, who was much higher on this new, supposedly real list, as if hackers had moved him down on the other but left the rest the same. It was brilliant. The substitution was so plausible. Just what an anti-Mitsubishi conspirator might have altered to make it feel like everyone was ranking the Mitsubishi low. This would make it seem as if Ando's general fall in the lists was faked by a conspiracy, rather than a symptom of any real Mitsubishi crisis, and it would draw attention away from poor Black Sakura. He found a way. The censor's powers could do nothing, but the anonymous had found a way. Mason turned again to me. Non te imperio prodere aliquod de officio censoris, sed solum opinionem tuum. Quod possim facere et curos protegerem. I will not order you to betray anything from the censor's office, but only your own opinion. What can I do to protect the cars? Custodesne sanir weeks booth bash domi ponere debeo? Should I send guards to the sanir weeks booth bash house? Studentesne mitere ut docerent et prosicario aluisque substituerent. Should I send students to learn and substitute for sniper and the others? Aut ab utopianis petere debeone ut pararent sustinere ipse totam systema mundi si iste bash cadet? Or should I seek from the utopians that they prepare to sustain the entire global system if that bash fails? The emperor looked to the window, where he could see the cars landing across the city like a rain of constant meteors, his fists clenched. Non vacua sedebo, et permitebo hic iocus mundum meum accidere. I will not sit idly and let this prank wound my world. Non credo hic est iocus, Caesar. I don't think it's a joke, Caesar, I answered, not quite daring to meet his eyes. Sed aliquid sinisterior, et credo ut vos omnes non prius placebitis, quam omnes septem apud matronam convenistis. But something more sinister, and I think that all of you will not be calm until all seven convene at Madame's. Omne suspectum habetis, ut unus de septum hanc perfidiam coniuraret. You all have suspicions that one of the seven planned this treachery. Omnibus convocatis, invenire poteritis si recte sentis. When everyone has been called together, you'll be able to discover whether you guess right. It is maddening, is it not, my non-Masonic reader, watching the Latin slip past incomprehensible? It is worst with Latin, too, for it was by chance you were not raised to speak French or Japanese, but no one is raised on Latin. Latin is a choice. Hives are strengthened by having a tongue, so Mason chose the language of Rome, of empire, of power, simplified to make it easier. It is no race's language anymore. Not even Martin Guildbreaker dared study Latin before his Annus Dilegorum. So all Masons, whether new converts or the sons of emperors, are equal as they sit down in those classrooms, the true Sancta Sanctorum of Masonic mysteries, which teach the tongue of power, as potent for Martin as for Machiavelli and Montaigne. It was your choice, reader, whether or not to heed the myth and study Latin. Now you pay the price. Another note from 9A. I didn't have the heart to cut this. I oversimplify. One living among us was raised on Latin. Salve, Pater. Hello, Father. J.E.D.D. Mason entered from an inner room, announced by the guards saluting their Porphyrogene. Mater salutem dicit. Mother sends her regards. A common father smiles at the arrival of his son, but Mason's face does something deeper, graver. Like a ship's captain peering at the morning sky to see what weather it might bring. Salve, fili. Hello, son, the emperor greeted. Bene investigatio estne? Is the investigation going well? No emotion accompanied his almost whispered words. Canis abest. The dog is missing. Abest? Missing? Dominic? Cur? Quam diu? Why? For how long? This is where Mycroft started to supply Masonic Latin translations of the prince's rather bizarre Latin, but I'll try my best to give you the sense of the prince's actual words. Niscu. I don't know, the son answered. Ni ampliorem quam chimicem odoraretur non peccaret, Dominicus. Unless he smelled something larger than a bedbug, Dominic would not sin. Footnote 1. Mycroft's translation. Nisi aliquid gravem olfactoret Dominic non abeset. The emperor frowned. Credisne ut in periculum eset? Do you think they're in danger? Nullo cursis pacto. A very strong form of no. Non quicus est hic nebulo vero fidus canis. This scoundrel is not the membrane around a pomegranate seed, i.e. a negligible thing, but truly the dog is faithful. Quod superest, tibi temet non lucubrandums. That aside, you yourself should not burn lamp oil late at night. Ad hoc exitium conivere potes. For now, you can blink at this mischief. Footnote 2, Mycroft's translation. Procerto non. Non nullius momentis est hic fur, sed fidus est Dominic. Certe, nocte laborare non debes, etiam nunc situm praeterere potes. Mason searched his son's face for some sign of how he truly took Dominic's absence. For it is hard for a father to believe that any child would not feel something at the absence of his most constant companion. His face showed nothing. Have you ever in a museum, reader, seen a case of lizards or small frogs, and you cannot tell in their stillness whether they are live or models until you press your cheek against the glass and look for breath stirring in their sides? Here, you would have to do it with a man. Non sufficit. Not enough. The emperor turned. You could make a new car system, couldn't you? Like magic, reader. Hear likeness in his English, as when Hector, breaker of horses, after days handing out death to foes around Troy's ramparts, comes home at last to lift his child in his arms. No, it is not to me he speaks. See there, brilliant in the corner, the nowhere children, Audrin and Voltaire. The pair glanced at one another. A new system, Caesar? Everyone is paying too much attention to the 7-10 lists and not enough to the cars. The 7-10 lists are nothing, an embarrassment. The cars are the bloodstream of civilization. You have your own system, your own computers. If the Senir Weeksbooth Bosch goes down, could you take over running transport for the world? They looked at each other through their visors. I will never tire of studying the space station which Aldrin's utopian coat makes of Alexandria. It is not new and cold like a fresh-launched shuttle, but a patchwork, bits of mismatched hull barely space-tight. An ancient space station, if you can imagine such a thing, used, battered, and remade, like the museum wing of the ISSC, where field trips paused to see the original parts of the station that grew appendage by appendage into the current city. That is Aldrin's Alexandria. Voltaire's I avoid looking at. Exquisite as it is, I cannot bear seeing the capital in ruins. What about the backup station at Salehard? Aldrin asked. Surely they'd take over. I want two safety nets when civilization teeters. Again, they traded digital glances. It's not our constellation, Caesar, but with time and access to the current systems, I imagine we could develop a substitute. How long? I don't know, Caesar, I'll ask. A lot would depend on whether we can have access to the proprietary parts of the Senir Weeksbooth system. Why do you need their system? We need to control their cars. We don't have enough, and ours are slower, plus. J.E.D.D. Mason answered more bluntly than Voltaire dared. The world will not be content handing such power to Utopia. There will be a backlash. Mason scowled. Then make it for me. Let it be my Masons, not Utopia, who hold it in the world's eyes. I will not watch this halt the bloodstream of my world. All right, Caesar. We'll see what we can do. Thank you. Even an emperor does, on occasion, thank. How's your part of the investigation going? Well, I hope. Yes, Caesar. The trace shifter artifact was only on for 2 seconds at its second activation inside the Senir Weeksbooth Bosch house, but we learned much more about its initial effects. We are preparing a report to present to all seven soon. Good. And Mycroft has been forthcoming. Here the iron returned to Mason's voice. As forthcoming as they can be when they don't really know anything. The Canner device is very badly named. A glance at me. Have they been forthcoming about Ando and Ganymede? Visors traded confusion. Caesar, I'm not sure what you mean. Mason's eyes fixed on me with no less menace than the barrel of Occam's gun. Ando summoned you to Togienkyo, Mycroft, minutes after the break-in was reported, and Ganymede summoned you to La Trimouille. Yes, Caesar. Are they frightened for the cars, or for themselves? There was disgust in the set of his jaw. Both, Caesar, I would say. Why? The word transfixed me, like a needle through a butterfly. It was not just Danae's blackmail that made me hesitate, her power to reveal that I still have my method to move unseen. The Mitsubishi need no blackmail to command me. I serve the world, all of it, every hive, every human. What I destroyed robbed all. So it is to all that I owe my great debt. I owe Ando, from whom I took Kohaku Mardi, Giamardi, probably young Ken if he had lived to choose a hive. I owe Ganymede, from whom I took Mallory Mardi, and the half of Sen that belonged more to the humanists than to her dear Apollo. I owe Utopia. But by law, my life is Caesar's, and I owe Caesar too. For Geneva Mardi, for Aeneas, for Chiesa, Jules, and I owe them for Apollo. Their Grace the Duke suspected Sniper, I answered. That much was easy. I could be good witness to Ganymede's innocence and ignorance. I helped them confirm it was unfounded. They were upset, worried, largely about protecting the cars, the Senir Weeksbooth system, and the peace. Trapped in Caesar's gaze, I shivered reflexively, feeling that I must have transgressed, sinned, even though in fact it was the truth. And Ando? Panic took me. Caesar could read it. I read it in his face, imperious like Zeus when he gazes on others, but for me he becomes Hades. If there is a limit on how much righteous punishment Cornell Mason would inflict upon me, that limit stands beside him. I can answer, Pater. Chichiwe asked Mycroft about the misnamed Canner device. Three breaths as Mason's mind turns. Why did Ando learn the device was involved so long before I did? That question is of interest, Pater. Perhaps the Tokyo police reported the break-in to Chichiwe before calling Romanova. Or perhaps Chichiwe had a special vigil already prepared. Why? Chichiwe can sense that I disclose to you alone, Pater, their inherited complicity. Inherited? Prior aliquis publicis Mitsubishi's auctor fuit. Some earlier Mitsubishi official planned, designed, authored it, i.e. the device. That part had to be in Latin, to keep Ando's truth secret from Utopia, but English was enough for the rest. Its root and cradle are expunged. Its conception rude and condemned by Chichiwe and all his peers, but fearsome is the public storm which threatens, if exposure links Japan to the blame and name of Canner, so fearsome that the dread of it is wielded by the Mitsubishi splinters one against another even now, imperiling many beyond Chichiwe. I see. Thinking in Latin already, Caesar doubtless found his son's tangled English easier to parse than the frowning Utopians did. Then I must remind the minor directors once again that my friendship extends to Ando, not to them, and that my hand is gentle only with those I trust. Is Ganymede aware of this tie between Ando and the Canner device? Non credo. I think not. Slinking a pace toward the shelter of the Porphyrogene made me bold enough to speak. I have told everything I know about it, Caesar, to Aldrin and Voltaire, and I am working to track down the people I knew who were connected with it at the time. The time, reader. For me, there is only one time, and Caesar knows it. But I've been busy with the censor, and I could not name the other things. Then you may pursue that further when I finish with you tonight. Prior sumus, pater. Manere debes. We are prior, father. You must wait. I froze here, awaiting Caesar's verdict. We all had to. In this Masonic sanctum, all were familiares. Even these utopians, the gray armbands dull against their coats like damage on a painting. Theirs, though, were special, edged in white like J.E.D.D. Mason's, though without his purple trim, to show that while the Emperor trusts them absolutely, the Utopians do not trust their members to his capital power. These Utopians are not Caesar's, but loaned to Caesar, and there's a guardian constellation ready to snatch them back to the heavens. Are you surprised, reader, that you have never heard of the Familiaris Candidus? White Band Familiaris? It is a recent office, created for Apollo Mojave by Cornell Mason when he came to the throne 29 years ago. That J.E.D.D. Mason's armband, too, is edged in white, is often taken as another proof that he is not the successor. Esto, pater, the Porphyrogene conceded. Prior fias. You may be first. Mason nodded thanks for his son's concession. Quid vis, Caesar? What do you want? I asked. Why did Caesar answer in English? I think so the Utopians could witness what good use he put me to. I will have from you what you give the censor. You will tell me what these new 710 lists will do to the world, and what the old lists would have done if only Black Sakura were violated and not the Anonymous and Brillist lists as well. Ando, Ganymede, and the Anonymous are giving this part of the affair far more attention than it seems to deserve. You'll show me why. Then you may resume your other work. In my heart, I raised a silent, grateful prayer that he did not want to ask me about my presence at the Senir Weeks booth Bosch. As fear eased, I felt at last the touch of after midnight. I will do it, Caesar, I answered. But I don't think I can do both jobs tonight without another dose of anti-sleeps, and I'm over my limit again. There are few souls who would have smiled pity at my fatigue. The Major, Bridger, perhaps you, magnanimous reader, who have seen my labors of these past days and counted how rarely I have taken food or rest. In Alexandria, not even the Utopians, who love all creation with a child's love, had smiles for me. Mason turned to Utopia. Will your investigation suffer if Mycroft sleeps and serves you tomorrow? Digital glances. That should be all right. We could use some rest ourselves. They turned to J.E.D.D. Mason. Is that acceptable, Mike? His Utopian nickname is not short for Michael, though the invocation of Heinlein's might be intentional. It is short for Mitromegas, Little Big, the alien visitor from Jupiter who towers over humankind in grandeur and philosophy in Patriarch Voltaire's famous and possibly Earth's oldest science fiction tale. He raised his eyes to Aldrin, slowly, intentionally, and the hairs on my neck stood stiff as I saw him actually seem to look at something in the room with him. How long until the next Mars launch? He asked. 2 days, 1 hour. Her eyes wanted to ask the reason for the question, but her tongue knew better. Do Utopians ever reject an application to join the Hive? He asked. Aldrin exchanged nervous glances with Voltaire, or seemed to. Not that I've heard of. We can check if you like, Mike. Sic fiat. Brevi quam expiriatur theoria Martinus habet. Let it be so. Martin has a theory soon to be tested. Then for Utopia, he translated himself. Tomorrow suffices. The Utopians looked to me in their confusion, but like them I could not then understand the purpose of his question. I think, knowing more now, that he asked it for Martin, that at that moment Martin's master had invited him to listen over his tracker, to hear our words. More meat for the investigation. Caesar, an aide intruded. The Reservation Oversight Commission is waiting in the August room. I come. Mason looked to me, his face as grim as those archaic statues carved before Greece learned to sculpt a smile. Tomorrow will not do for me. You may eat now, Mycroft. You may sleep when I am done with you. At Mason's nod, a guard rolled a prepackaged sandwich across the table, which slid off to plop at my feet within its plastic shroud. Voltaire's digital eyes followed me as I knelt to take the food, though I cannot express what expression truly lay beneath the visor. Be careful not to exhaust, Mycroft, Caesar. They owe us, too. Chapter the 22nd. Mycroft is Mycroft. Bridger crossed his arms, his small hands snuggling in the looseness of his play-stained sleeves. Reading that stuff is only making you more mad. Anger tears had made Carlyle's eyes red around the lenses, which shimmered with the records of my deeds. He lay in the grass and blossom bedding of the flower gully, facing Thisbe's door. Sometimes it's correct to be mad. Why? The child's chirp matched the singing of the night's insects. Because if I don't have the pictures in front of me, I can't believe a human being really did those things. To make a list of all the nastiest ways to kill somebody and to go through it systematically, it... Bridger sniffed. I know it was the worst thing anybody's ever done. But that was then, Mycroft. Now Mycroft is different. Carlyle let the glitter of the computer leave his eyes. People have done much worse things in the past, but that sort of thing doesn't happen anymore. We were supposed to be past that. Bridger settled in the grass beside Carlyle, gazing up into the strip of Chile's stunning stars above the gully. You remember back then? Everyone remembers. He fidgeted with a dry stem. What do you remember especially? The photos Mycroft took of Ibis Mardi? I haven't seen them, but I know. Carlyle shuddered. I remember the first one most, when they found Senator Aeneas Mardi. Bridger nodded. That was the one Mycroft stabbed to death on the Ides of March, like Julius Caesar? And left the body on the altar of peace in Romanova. That's how it started. The sensei hugged himself within his wrap. We refuse to call them dresses, these wraps that flow around the knees and ankles, tempting one to peek at what lies hidden. But if they are not feminine, why do only cousins wear them? I was in Romanova then, studying. I walked by the altar of peace every day. I didn't see the body, but I saw the blood. I actually saw it, spattered all over inside of the little shrine. It looked like someone painted red holly berries on the flower garlands carved in the stone, and the basin on the altar was full of blood. All the Nobel Peace Prize medals drenched in it like pancakes and strawberry syrup. 219. I remember the news saying the killer intentionally sloshed the medals around to make sure the blood got on all 219. 219? That's how many years it has been since they stopped giving out the Peace Prize. All the remnants of the Church War were dealt with more than 200 years ago, so nowadays they just put the medals on the altar of peace every year to commemorate another year of peace. Carlyle hid behind his hair. That year, they almost shouldn't have. Boo settled down between the pair, offering warmth and wagging. Were you studying at the Gorai Sen Seminary or the McKay Institute? Bridgers smirked at Carlyle's astonishment. I've been looking at campuses. I'm leaning toward Romanova, too. There are really good craft and design schools, so I can learn to make toys of things, I imagine, plus lots of philosophy and theology. I need that. Yes, you do. Plus, Mycroft is in Romanova all the time for work, so they can keep an eye out for me. I've been studying for it, too, learning about normal life. And Mycroft takes me to Cato's Junior Scientists Club, so I can learn how to make friends and have a bosh someday. Carlyle's face warmed for a moment, but only a moment. Mycroft Kanner wants you to have a bosh? You know it wasn't strangers Mycroft Kanner killed, right? It was their foster bosh. It wasn't their foster bosh, Bridger snapped. Mycroft was fostered by the Terra Firma bosh, which was two doors down from the Mardi bosh. And you don't know more about Mycroft from seeing a lot of news reports and icky photos than I do from talking to Mycroft every day for years and years. Carlyle smiled weakly at the ferocity in Bridger's eyes. That's true, but I know different things. Now it was Bridger's turn to hug his knees. Maybe. Mycroft Kanner charmed everyone in the Mardi bosh, spent time there, got everyone to think of them like an unofficial member, just like Thisbe and their bosh mates have here. That's how Mycroft Kanner works. They trick people into thinking of them as family. It's different. They're safe now. They wouldn't do anything. Plus, the police watch Mycroft all the time. Sometimes Mycroft can't come see me for days and days because they're watching too close. You saw they had to slip their tracker just to come tonight. Carlyle almost laughed, the stage beyond tears. That just means Mycroft can still slip their tracker. If they can do it to come help you, they can do it for other reasons. Boo's whine made Bridger peer more closely at the sensei. You're shaking. Carlyle looked at his hands. I'm sorry, It was just very important, Mycroft Kanner being gone. Mycroft Kanner was a tragic, horrible thing that happened, but it was over. The world wasn't like that. I thought lots of people liked Mycroft. There's the fans, and photo books, and Kanner Beat, and there was just another movie. Thisbe said it was pretty good. Carlyle gagged. Those people are sick, Bridger. And there are fewer and fewer of them. We're healing. Mycroft was on a 710 list in 2441, but never after that. The scars were healing. It's different when you know the monster is still here. Mycroft's not a monster. Bridger rose, burying his arms in the folds of his wrap. I have to pack. You can come inside and help me clean up and talk, or you can sit there and be wrong. It's up to you. The sensei could not accept option two. How can I help? Can you fold clothes? Yes. Come in, then. A quick jog up the flower bed, and Carlyle ducked the plastic sheeting to find the cave in ruins, shelves bare, mattress gutted, every possession strewn across the floor. You can pick the clothes out and fold them. Put them there. Bridger pointed to a bookcase near the entrance, standing almost straight. The soldiers are out on patrol, so you don't have to worry about stepping on them. Oh, right. Carlyle dared not to admit he had forgotten. You shouldn't be mad at Mycroft anyway, not you. You're a cousin. Cousins are supposed to forgive everybody. Carlyle's voice grew light, distracted. That's the stereotype. Mycroft said at the trial it was Briar Casala who kept bringing up how this was society's fault for not doing more to help a kid who'd been through all that. Bridger paused to huff and puff as he tugged at a blanket wedged between shards of desk. That's how cousins are supposed to think. We all feel better telling ourselves Mycroft Kanner was just a trauma victim, that a monster like that can only happen in the incredibly improbable circumstance of a bosh house exploding and killing every member except an 8-year-old kid who has to recover alone from being blown almost limb from limb. Of course Mycroft Kanner went nuts. If we just take better care of traumatized orphans from now on, this will never happen again. That way we don't have to admit that a human being actually chose to do... Tears seized Carlyle again, sapping his strength as he struggled with a fallen bookcase. But it was so premeditated. There's never been a crime so premeditated. Mycroft Canner spent years learning languages just to make it easier to deceive their victims. That's not lashing out at random, that's... Mycroft can't anymore. Can't what? Can't kill? The major says Mycroft lost it. Bridger took a chunk of dollhouse in his arms. The major can tell. The major said a skeptic can't be a killer. And they made Mycroft a servicer, and all the hive leaders know. Do you think they're all wrong, too? A deep breath. Mycroft Canner is very good at deceiving people. The major's killed people, too. In the war, lots and lots of people. Are you going to say the major's bad now, too? That's different. No, it's not. Bridger's wrath set Boo's blue fur bristling. The army men are people, too. Just because they're toys, you can't say killing them doesn't count. No, no, I didn't mean that. They're people. I respect that. But war is different. War is for something, at least in people's minds. Mycroft killed for art, for fun, killing for the sake of killing, evil for the sake of evil. A fast sob. I remember, whenever a new member of the Boche would disappear, people would start to place bets what the killer would do this time. Vivisection, immolation. People enjoyed it, thinking like, Mycroft's goal was to make the world worse. That's evil. Yes? That caught Carlyle off guard. Yes what? Yes, it's evil. But you said the world was getting better. People were thinking like that less. So, same for Mycroft. They were caught. They changed. They got better. The cousin gave a scornful snort. So, one day they're happily vivisecting Mercer Marty, and the next, boom, cured. Impossible. Bridger faced him across the dollhouse wreckage. Miracles are impossible. That's different. Why? It's... I give the gag gene credit for pausing to try to find a real answer. You create things, Bridger. You don't make people into different people. You should talk to Mycroft. You'll see how different they are. A shudder. I don't want to be in a room with Mycroft, Canner. Call on Mycroft's tracker, dummy. Bridger was too young for his brow to really furrow in anger, but he did his best. It's better to try to find stuff out than to sit around and be wrong. Someone needs to drag you with a flashlight. What? When I was little, I was scared of the noises from the trash mine. I thought there was a monster in there. Eventually, I told the major, and the army men got a flashlight and made me look. I didn't want to, but they dragged me over, and it was just the robots there. No monster. Then I wasn't scared anymore. Someone needs to drag you with a flashlight and make you look at Mycroft Canner. Knock, knock, called Thisbe through the plastic sheeting. Are you kids playing nice? Bridger had a smile for Thisbe. Did you get rid of Occam? Yes, they're off filing paperwork. And you, Carlyle, have a lot of documentation to read. Why didn't you tell me that was Mycroft Canner? Carlyle asked flatly. Thisbe summoned her best false smile. Bridger, sweetheart, it's much too late for you to be up. Mamadal's made up a nice bed for you in my closet, all cuddly with lots of pillows, and you'll be safer there. I want to wait up for Mycroft. Absolutely not. It's much, much, much too late for you to be awake. But Mamadal says straight to bed. You don't want to make her sad, do you? No one could resist that. Okay, but only if you make Carlyle stop being wrong. Thisbe gave a little laugh. I'll try, I promise. Good. My brave defender gave Carlyle a last glare, then stomped off through the flowers to the much-needed pillow fort. Thisbe turned dark eyes on Carlyle. Come outside, now. The cousin folded one last T-shirt, over-meticulously to prolong the pause. Why didn't you tell me that was Mycroft Canner? Because you'd react like this. Come back outside. He followed haltingly, like a dog that does not really want to come home from play. You've had your Bosch adopt Mycroft Canner. You know what happened to the last Bosch that adopted Mycroft Canner? The witch's, apologies, master, the woman's tone grew richer as she basked in the night air. Mycroft's an amateur. Occam and Sniper are experts, trained. They have to be, or they wouldn't be trusted with the system. We're in no danger from Mycroft Canner. Carlyle winced, as though his stomach turned. Are you a Cannerite? She gave a little laugh. It's so juvenile, Cannerism, a philosophy concocted by a 17-year-old. It's sick, he almost spat. Sincere training tries to present it like a legitimate belief system, but I've had a couple of Cannerite parishioners. It wasn't a philosophy. They were just sick people reciting trivia about Mycroft Canner like some dark messiah. Why do you want that near you? Thisbe gazed at him, a long, indulgent pause. Follow me up to the bridge. In his distraction, Carlyle started up the stairway before thinking to ask, why? The speed of her ascent made Thisbe pant. Someone's here from Romanova. What? Eureka just called me. They've touched down. At midnight? This is Chile, reader, and the America's night still young. I told you there are protocols when someone recognizes Mycroft Canner. A new voice called down from above them, a woman's, but almost too deep to be a woman's. Age 31, born August 2nd, 2423. Brownish black hair. Many distinctive scars, including a round, 2-centimeter section missing from right ear. Thisbe accelerated. That's no officer I know. The stranger leaned forward over the side of the bridge, the better to call down at the now rushing pair. Captured on March 26th, 2440, sentenced to lifetime service, March 28th, 2440, registered personal possessions, 5, 1 non-uniform hat, 1 pair of non-regulation shoes, 1 writing and computation tablet, 1 photograph of the members of their birth bash, and 1 paper copy of Homer's Iliad, with a bookmark made from a lock of Sen Mardi's hair and annotation by Apollo Mojave. Thisbe reached the bridgeway first. Who are you? Giulia Doria Pamphili. The stranger stepped into a shaft of streetlight, which revealed an elegantly tailored European suit, double-breasted, with champagne cording accenting its blue-black silk. Her hair was dark, thick, bound back in a bun which spiraled like a nautilus, and her grave face tempered by the creases of a perpetual smile. I'm Mycroft Canner's court-appointed censeur. Chapter the 23rd. Pontifex Maxima. Julia, Carlyle gaped. Why are you here? Giulia Doria Pamphili paced toward Carlyle and Thisbe, her old-fashioned ankle boots clicking on the walkway. It's 5 in the morning by your sleep schedule, and your tracker registered a heartbeat as if you were being chased by rampant wildebeests. And then I got a ping about Mycroft Canner. You think I'm not going to check that you're all right? Thisbe stared at this European, the conclave pin on her breast, its little band of gold. The conclave head? Julia surveyed Thisbe down to the maze-like landscapes of her boots. You must be human, Thisbe Sanir. Her pronunciation was slow and luxurious, especially on the Humanist Hive title, as if she enjoyed the act of differentiating people. Do I have you to thank for the timely call? Julia offered a well-lotioned handshake. Thisbe accepted the hand. Nice to meet you, Is it July or Julia? Julia. It was a fair question. Even newspapers sometimes substitute the socially correct degendered Jules or July, but Roman nobility, as ancient as the Doria Pamphili line, who can boast princes, popes, and, thanks to forged medieval genealogies, consuls and senators, scoffs at the modern fashion which would strip the sex from Julia. In person, she exudes antiquity. Her tailored suit, her hair as black as baking chocolate, with the perfect ancient wave one sees on busts and caryatids. She wears it always bound back in coils, so one cannot guess how much of it there is. Such a busy vocateur has little time for strats or their insignia, so she wears none but the narrow Italian and Roman strat bracelets. The long censer's scarf, which winds three times around her shoulders, is vibrant violet silk, lined with equally violet velvet. And she wears only the most precisely tailored European suits, so every curve shows through. The Doria Pamphili Palace, with its stunning galleries of art treasures, was fully reconstructed after the Church War, and belongs to the family still. But Julia gave up Rome for Romanova, where she accepted her post as conclave head, and with it her office in the Regia Pontificis, at the heart of the new forum. Her kin thought her a fool. "You're Mycroft, Censor?" Thisbe asked. "Personally? Isn't that a bit cruel?" The European laughed. "Is my reputation really as bad as all that?" "Not bad," Thisbe corrected. "Just, from what I've heard, your specialty is one-time visits where you, dismember my parishioners?" Laughter sparkled in Julia's eyes. "How do they put it in that editorial, Carlyle? I slash my clients to the heart, bearing their hidden hypocrisies until they leave, what was it, a shattered wreck." Carlyle had been glaring stubbornly, but this answer at least matched his mood. "A shivering wreck." "Shivering? Yes, that's good. And then they go back to their regular sensei, who nurses them back to sanity over months of great epiphanies." Julia stretched her neck to pop her shoulders. "I know it sounds dramatic, but while my specialty is deep cutting sessions, I can do normal ones too. I took on Mycroft Canner because I didn't want to give the most difficult case I'd ever seen to someone too sensitive." She gave a little sigh. "And don't worry, I'm not stalking Cato Weeksbooth." Thisbe snorted. "Good." "Stalking Cato Weeksbooth?" Carlyle repeated. Julia's smile winced a small apology. "You know Cato's phobic of censers. We ran into one another once, and the poor thing fell down a flight of stairs trying to run away, broke an arm and a leg." "That wasn't in the file." Carlyle's brows narrowed. "Neither was the fact that Mycroft Canner frequents this bash. Did you know when you sent me?" Julia drew close enough to pick grass seed from Carlyle's fraying scarf. "I did know, and I'm sorry about that. I filed the paperwork to get permission to tell you, but it's still processing. There's enough red tape around Mycroft Canner to wrap up a renunciation column like a stick of peppermint. But what was it that threw you into such a panic an hour ago? Something to do with Mycroft?" "They met," Thisbe answered simply. "No!" Carlyle's voice is too light to thunder, but in this moment he tried. "We didn't just meet. It turned out I'd met Mycroft Canner days ago, but no one saw fit to tell me. You knew they frequented this bash. How could you send me with no warning?" Julia reached up to brush back the strands of blonde which sweat glued to Carlyle's forehead. "I couldn't leave the bash without a censer for the month right after their old one died. I had to send someone. This is exactly your specialty. So I knew if anyone could cope, it would be you." Thisbe crossed her arms, watching the pair. "So it was you who assigned Carlyle. You know we requested a humanist." Carlyle winced, as if the words were blows. If you don't think I'm doing a good job, you're doing a great job, Carlyle. I just think it's important for requests to be honored, especially politically sensitive requests. Julia turned her smile on Thisbe, a deep, self-satisfied smile, as if every person she meets is some new platter at a banquet. You also requested someone with security pre-cleared and who could handle Cato Weeksbooth and the other particularities of your bash. I didn't have a humanist with the right skills. Carlyle is my own student, one of the very best, as well as one of my most skilled specialists. Carlyle gave a bashful smile. Thisbe will not be deflected. In what? Getting us over losing our sensei? That's a pretty short-term issue to trump our actual request. Kindly Carlyle bit his lip. Julia is not so gentle. Bash loss. Our Carlyle is a bash loss specialist. You all should have had one 5 years ago. I understand why you work so hard to keep the accident from the public. World transit system left in the hands of traumatized 20-somethings is a headline sure to bring world panic. But I looked over your files. Cato Weeksbooth, if nothing else, proves you really should have switched to a specialist when it happened. See a quiver rise in Thisbe's throat now, on her lips, as she glances back at the glassy Bash house where generations shared the family duty. Loving grand-papas working side by side with the bright new generation, but where now Occam, not yet 31, is master of the house. There are many empty rooms upstairs. It was a rafting accident that claimed the Senior Weeksbooth elders, humanists and their heroic risks. Ganymede knew, Romanova knew, the powers that be. They were informed at the time. But there was no obituary. No honors for these brave servants of the world, not one. Not when all hives hover hungry for an excuse to take away this all-powerful family business. I think the hardest kind of mourning is when you have to lie. Thisbe hid her feelings with a laugh. Makes sense. Cato does need it. I didn't think of it. Another defensive chuckle. No insult intended, but a fluffy little cousin doesn't seem the type for such a grim specialty. It was because of Mycroft Canner. Carlyle can sound grim in his light, icy way. Thisbe stared. Thisbe sighed. You wanted to be the one to make sure it never happens again? She took a deep breath. Wow, this was handled very badly for you. I'm sorry. I had no idea the Canner murders were such an important thing for you, more than for most people. Deep breath. I'm sorry. With an expression something between a wince and a slight smile, Carlyle nodded. It's all right. I didn't tell you my specialty. You couldn't have known. Julia craned her neck to make Carlyle meet her gaze, warm, earnest, condescending. I'm sorry, too, that it worked out this way, She fixed a sweet little pout on Carlyle until he offered up a smile. But honestly, I didn't expect you to run across Mycroft so soon. They aren't around that much. You may be my most enthusiastic student, but I didn't think you'd be here every single day. You only had 2 appointments this week. I got a call from your bash that they've hardly seen you the past 3 days. They were wondering where you were. And I hear you stood up Jamusa yesterday. She held up a scolding finger. I shouldn't have better track of your dating life than you do. In better light, one might have seen the pale-skinned cousin blush. Good. Now, Julia continued, while it's very poetic meeting under the moonlight, I'm sure poor Thisbe, may I call you Thisbe? Whatever. Then you must call me Julia. I'm sure poor Thisbe would like to get to bed. I will escort Carlyle home. We'll talk on the way. They'll get a good night's sleep. They'll spend some time at their bash tomorrow, rest, and stay out of your hair. She smiled at Thisbe. A smile of relief touched Thisbe's cheeks, then faded. No, I can't let you go like this. Carlyle still thinks Mycroft is a danger, and they voiced explicit intent to tell people. That's a threat to my Bosch and to the system.